This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here this week with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia. It's good to be back.
I'm glad you're back, and I'm glad you have escaped the clutches of death, it sounds like, but barely. Rough vacation.
It was. So sorry for missing last week, but while on my lovely sick vacation, I got to spend my time sitting out by a pool, reading and dying. And it was a lovely spot to read Papadopoulos' new book that came out not too long ago.
Oh, that happened? I did not know that
happened. Deep State Target. Yes. I took that bullet so y'all don't have to. Read the thing.
Let's hear about it. I had no idea that he even had a book coming out, but, you know, tell me what it was like.
Well, you clearly don't follow him on Twitter because it's about all he's been tweeting about for like six
months.
Oh, no,
I don't. I don't.
He's been hyping it up like, oh, he's going to tell everything that happened to him and give the whole story.
It was a nothing burger, right? Was it a nothing burger?
I mean, it was nothing like, spoiler, nothing shocking or like unexpected necessarily. To start with, it is terribly written. Like, the only thing I can equate it to is reading someone's really long email about their vacation adventures.
Okay.
I mean, the sentence structure is like, it's complete. It's not like grammatically incorrect, but it's just very like informally written. And also, most of it's written in present tense, just to make it all that much more aggravating. And then I'll randomly flip back and forth between like present and past. And you're like, oh my God.
That's
so
odd.
Anyway, that's not the important part here. To recap, Papadopoulos, George Papadopoulos, is the first person to have pled guilty in the Mueller probe way back like a decade ago.
We got so excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely out of left field. He was a low-level foreign policy advisor. He was announced at the same time, say, like Carter Page was back in March 2016, I'm pretty sure. And he had a very thin resume. He was very young. I mean, on his resume back then, he had like his participation in Model UN listed, which people were like, wait, what? And of course, in his book, he takes like pot shots at people for like calling him out for Model UN. He's like, it's a respectable thing to do. What happened? Like, why would you make fun of me for that? How dare you? Like, I bet those journalists were on their student newspapers and no one's mocks them for that. Yeah, it was super petty. It was super petty. But anyway, it gives like, you know, I was hoping it might, it's probably stupid of me, but I was hoping it might give a little bit of a more honest account of Papadopoulos' background and what, how he came to be involved in all this. It probably doesn't do much to fill the picture there. So to break down, I guess, the big picture points, first of all, he claims that even though he pled guilty to lying to FBI investigators about, let's just back up a bit, 2017, January, he is interviewed by the FBI. And this is before Mueller. This is just about the various reports come out. Investigation's ongoing. And he
lies.
Two FBI guys show up at his door. He is a dumbass and does not ask for an attorney. He goes and is interviewed by them. And like he even says in his book, he's like, the guy told me as we're driving there, like, all you got to do is tell the truth and nothing bad will happen to you. And I took it as a threat. I'm like, no, dude, that was some good advice.
Right. That's what your lawyer would have told you.
Yeah. So what happened in that interview is he says that he would talk to a guy named Mifsud over when he was, you know, doing his trips around London for no apparent reason during the election. And Mifsud told him that the Russians have Hillary Clinton's emails. And he says that was before, though, he got to be on the Trump campaign. He said many other things, too. But that statement is the basis of his ultimate guilty plea because he talked to Mifsud after he joined the Trump team.
I mean, now, what a stupid thing to, you know, I mean, such an easily checked thing to lie about. It's kind of...
Well, that's kind of his point in the book. He's like, you know, he didn't lie. He claims it was, he claims basically he lied when he told the judge he was guilty. It was a wrongful conviction, essentially.
Oh, God. Our heart breaks.
Yeah. Yeah. He says that he was just talking off the cuff. He didn't know the dates. He got confused. He never intended to lie. He just remembered wrong. Which is, if
what do you think about that, though? I mean, because, you know, that can happen.
It can. And on the one hand, that's why you have an attorney there. That one in particular does seem like a little bit significant in that it does matter a lot if it was before or after he joined the Trump team. without the transcripts, it's hard to know exactly what went down. It's the kind of lie that, like, he can easily claim now in a sort of plausible way that, oh, I just misspoke. But he did plead guilty to it, and he claims he was pressured to it because he was threatened with charges that were also false against him. But based on what's in his book and what we know now of what the actual statements were, I don't buy it because, I guess we have partial pictures from the statement of the defense, and that paints a very different picture from his book. That's not to say that what's said in that document from Mueller's team is necessarily true, but the way it's laid out makes it seem much less like an innocent error.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, people can make innocent errors when it comes to dates. It happens all the time. But the reason I don't buy it is because when he's having these meetings, in those meetings, he's going to either be representing that he's part of this campaign or not at that point. Like, he's got to have some frame of reference. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm saying? Just in terms of, like, just kind of remembering during those meetings, like, kind of where he was situated, what he was representing, who he was working with. And to that extent, I think, like, that is bullshit. I mean, so you can mess up the dates, but that doesn't mean that you don't remember as, like, how you were conducting those meetings or what you were representing in those meetings.
Yeah, I do believe in general. I do think that's the kind of thing you could forget. I think there's more context given in the filings that suggest that is not plausible in this circumstance. The one that I need to, I kind of do want to go back and check, though, is the second charge. He ultimately did not plead guilty to it. It was dropped as part of the deal. But there was another charge against him initially, and that was obstruction of justice. And that one was because after his first interview, or second interview, I think, with the FBI, Papadopoulos deleted his Facebook account and then started a new one. Now, the story in the original, like, statement of defense was that he had deleted it because there were communications with people that he was trying to hide. Of course, there had already been warrants, so they'd already obtained those communications, unbeknownst to him. Now, the story he gives in the book is that he actually asked his attorneys if it was okay for him to delete it, and his attorneys gave him the go-ahead, and that he deleted it because he wanted Mifsud and other people to stop trying to contact him. But the attorney seemed to have backed him up that he did ask permission. And to me, I haven't actually gone back and reread the indictment or the statement, so I want to add a caveat there that I'm not really sure of a memory of it. But, like, to me, that actually does kind of change things if he truly did ask his attorney's permission and they gave it to him. So, whatever. He wasn't charged with it in the end. He was pled guilty to the lying, which he now says he shouldn't have done. But the reason he says he felt compelled to lie to the judge when he took his plea is that he was threatened with being charged for FARA violations, which is very likely true. It probably did happen. For being an unregistered Israeli agent.
Foreign agent, yeah.
Yeah, and that gets to the more fascinating part of Papadopoulos that we still have no answers to. And that is what the hell he was doing in his career and how that applies to his involvement on the Trump campaign. Now, the whole book is so frustratingly written in that he keeps, like, just not addressing all the many elephants in the room.
Right.
So the way his book is written, it's like, you imagine this, like, poor little soul who just keeps getting hired by shady businesses doing shady things that have weird ways of getting money he can't understand. And he's like, oh, well, I didn't think about too much. I had other things to do. He gets a new job. Same thing. He's like, I don't know why they're doing this way. I don't know why they even operated that way. Like, I don't know what their point was. It's very strange to me in hindsight that this company would do things this weird way. But I never really thought about it. And on and on. It's like he just falls. It just happens to him. Poor Papadopoulos just keeps winding up in these weird situations with shady people doing weird things he can't explain.
Is he making really big money while this is happening?
See, that's the thing. One thing it's never addressed, and he talks about how after he was first interviewed by the FBI, all his friends and relatives got interviewed as well, and they'd call him and say, hey, George, what's up? I just got to talk to the FBI. They kept asking me, where does your money come from? So the FBI clearly wanted to know where the money came from, too.
Yeah.
But George himself never explains. And he keeps talking about, like, during the campaign, how he's, like, jet-setting around the world for clients and, like, representing client interests. But it does not specify who these clients are, what value he could possibly have to them, or any of these, like, big issues that, like...
what he's doing for them. I mean, yeah. Anything at
I mean,
all.
Well, I think it's pretty clear he was being an unregistered foreign agent. And he does mention some of, like, the shady stuff that's clearly part of the heart of this, but he just moves on so fast that there's nothing, no insight gained. To me, I still think this, what it all comes down to is that stupid, like, gas pipeline in the Middle East. So the same company that was involved... I'll give the TLDR version. Basically, in Israel, there is a gas field. It is likely very valuable. It's called Leviathan. And there was questions about where they were going to take that gas out and how it was going to be transported. Now, according to Papadopoulos, his genius, the reason he's so famous and sought after, is he looked at a world map and was like, why is the U.S. aligned with Turkey? I think that is not to our geopolitical strategic interest. I have this wonderful revelation that instead we should align with Greece and Cyprus.
What? How did, they're all right next door. Okay, what?
Which way the pipeline's going to go is a big question. And he's like, right. And then they were like, oh, wow, Papadopoulos, you were right all along. That was like his grand idea, like looking at a map and being like, maybe we should not align with Turkey. And there are a lot of complicated like parts here. Like, it's not like a simple question of like, there's not like a right answer. It's really just like a money answer. Which corporate interest is going to win out? Papadopoulos, right. he's of like Greek heritage.
Clearly.
But he was, and so he obviously has, it seems like he has a lot of, he speaks Greek, he has a lot of contacts there. He may have some, like, business contacts there as well. But basically what it came down to is he was representing the side that wanted to have this gas go away from Turkey and go to Greece instead. And other countries would be benefiting by this because it would go through their territory as well.
To be, like, refined in Greece and stuff and then exported from there? Yeah. Is that what you mean?
But there's also political interests involved as well, because it's not just the money, it's not just the energy, it's politics. Now, one of the companies involved in this was Noble Energy Company, which, if you remember that name, it's because guess who was also connected to that? Mr. Mike Flynn. I still think that, like, a huge part of the nonsense from the 2016 election all came down to, like, a war of, like,
Flynn versus
foreign agents. Unregistered foreign agents about where this
Greece versus
gas
Turkey
pipeline's going to go.
Yeah, Greece versus Turkey.
That's what Flynn came in. Basically, I really think Turkey, like, realized after Papadopoulos was named as an advisor, and Papadopoulos' only achievement to date at that point was this pipeline idea of avoiding Turkey and going the other way. They're like, oh man, we need our own unregistered foreign agent. Let's get someone. And that's how they found Flynn, who just conveniently lobbied to have the gas going the other way,
towards
Turkey.
So nobody knows better than me that getting fit and staying healthy is not as easy as it should sound. I mean, it sounds like, oh, just eat right and exercise, but it's not that easy. It's not that easy because you gotta make sure that your life can accommodate, especially a workout schedule, which has been pretty challenging for me lately. And that's where OpenFit comes in.
OpenFit takes all the complexity out of losing weight and getting fit. It's a brand new, super simple streaming service that allows you to work out from the comfort of your living room in as little as 10 minutes a day.
I love it. Look, everybody's bodies are different and OpenFit gets that, which is why it's personalized to your needs with custom tailored original content. They've got amazing trainers and classes. And look, in the last 6 months, it's been all about like just body resistant classes, circuit training, the kind of stuff you can actually do at home, like the kind of classes that are offered by OpenFit.
You can access it anywhere and anytime. View on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, and Roku.
They have a whole range of different kinds of exercises. You can sculpt your body with Andrea Rogers, who's founder of the worldwide sensation Extend Bar, or get in crazy good shape with Hunter McIntyre, who was named by Sports Illustrated as one of the top 50 fittest athletes. They've got 600 seconds with celebrity trainer Devin Wiggins. I mean, like, they just have a huge range of workouts that are amazing. And you can lose up to 15 pounds in just the first 30 days.
OpenFit has changed the way we work out. And with our code 45th, you can join us on our fitness journey, personalized just for you. Again, use the code 45th and start using OpenFit for your journey to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-Day Challenge, our listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit, where you can lose up to 15 pounds in 30 days when you text 45th, 45TH, to 303030. You will get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts and nutritional information, totally free. Again, just text 45th to 303030. Standard message and data rates may apply. Anyway, that's a long way of saying that there's a lot of shady stuff going on. But when I try to imagine the 2016 dynamics, the idea that there was ever like a singular purpose is nonsense because there never was one. It was a bunch of people, a bunch of consultants having their own agendas who were using their involvement in the Trump campaign to further those agendas. They were trying to get Trump elected, but they were trying to get Trump elected in a way that benefited their, you know, consultant gigs, their side gigs, basically. And that is clearly somehow connected to wherever Papadopoulos gets his money from, which is lobbying. And probably FCPA violations. I'm just, you know, I don't know that, but to me it looks very possible that in addition to the FAR violations he was allegedly, well, not allegedly, he claims he was threatened with, that's possibly another issue he had on his radar and another reason he'd be inclined to cooperate.
But here's the thing, though. You're saying in the book, though, none of this is really delved into in terms of, like, the work he was doing anyway. So you kind of, like, well, how did he even write about these issues if he's not going to get to the meat of what the FBI is actually interested in?
I mean, if you're writing an email about your vacation and you had, like, something bad happen one day, it's easy to kind of gloss by it.
Is it like a 120-page book? It's like an e-book.
I don't know. I read it online, so you kind of just scroll through. It's not very long. My favorite part, though, is how he's all insistent the whole time. He's like, I was never, like, a Russian agent. Like, all these people just kept coming up to me and were like, oh, Russia, Russia, Russia. But I had nothing to do with it. How dare they accuse me of this? But then he goes and he talks about others in the campaign. And he is, like, bus-throwing left and right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's juicy.
Well, it's not even that juicy because he's like, I don't know anything. All I know is Carter Page is hella weird. That dude's totally a Russian agent. Like, he's like, I don't know what Carter Page's deal is. That dude, like, he's got some weird Russian thing going on. I don't know.
But I see in your notes that you said that he was asked to wear a wire. And I thought I hadn't heard that before.
Oh, that was with Misson. And he said no.
Okay. Oh, with Misson. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he also, but so Carter Page, just Carter Page, he also is like, oh, J.D. Gordon, that dude was totally under the spell of, like, a Russian seductress. And he's like, oh, yeah, Sam Clovis, when he interviewed me to hire me, he talked about Russia and then lied about it. Oh, yeah. And then Jeff Sessions, when I brought up the Putin meeting and the March foreign policy meeting at the Trump's D.C. hotel, he was all in favor of it, even though he lied about that, too. So, like, he gets, like, so indignant, like, how dare anyone suspect me of being, like, a Russian agent? And then it's like, I mean, all the other guys, maybe they were, I don't know.
Interesting. So has there been any kind of response from any of the folks named in the book as he's throwing them under the bus to this?
I don't think anyone cares about him.
Yeah.
I don't think he matters enough to do it.
Got it. Okay,
I was actually tweeting about, so I was, you know, kind of making fun of him. Not kind of, totally was. I was, like, comparing him to that dude in a horror movie who is just weirdly oblivious to all the signs of, like, flashing danger. Yeah. And, like, ends up killed, like, just for the halfway point, without fail. And he responded, and he's like...
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he was like, we agree. The deep state wasn't sending their best.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, no, Papadopoulos. They're not, I'm not talking about the, like, Sergey Milian and the others. I'm talking about you.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, he served his 2 weeks, and he's kind of, like, resigned to the annals of history. I mean, that's pretty much it. His relevance is pretty much... I mean, is there anything left?
His relevance is not over, because here's really? Why Papadopoulos still matters.
Okay, tell me why.
Papadopoulos was technically the start of the Russia investigation, because he had that meeting in the London wine bar with Downer, the Australian former diplomat. And Downer tells others that he had Papadopoulos tell him, oh yeah, the Russians have dirt on Hillary.
The emails, yep.
Mm-hmm. Now Papadopoulos is like, I don't remember ever saying that. I wouldn't have said
drunk.
That.
You were drunk.
Well, he says, I wasn't drunk. I only had one glass of wine. But he doesn't quite say, like, it didn't happen. Because he's like, oh, I think Downer was recording me. But I've searched my memory. I don't recall saying those words.
That's interesting. Okay.
But then he admits he had another meeting in Egypt, I think. And he just, like, the guy he was talking to had a meeting with Putin the next day. And he just blabs out, oh, yeah, I heard they have Clinton's emails. And then he's in his book, he's like, that was really stupid of me to say. I'm like, okay. So you're claiming you didn't blab to Downer that you had heard about the dirt. But then you admit that you just blabbed to other foreign leaders, like, randomly to brag.
He's really bad at this.
What it comes down to is he's a young hustler who was trying to use whatever perception of insider knowledge he could draw on to seem like he was cool and connected. But here's what the new conspiracy theory is. It's that we know that Papadopoulos learned this from Mifsud, the shady academic who met with him and told him that the Russians have dirt on Hillary. Now, Papadopoulos' story is he never told anyone in the Trump campaign. He told the Egyptians, he told the British, he told everyone else, but not the Trump campaign, apparently. His theory in the book, the whole point of the book, is he thinks Mifsud was a U.S. agent set up to entrap him somehow.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And that's where the new Republican, like, conspiracy theory is going. And this was all set up from the beginning, not from the Steele dossier, but from the Papadopoulos statement about the dirt on Hillary, that they, one, fed to him through Mifsud, a U.S. agent supposedly, and two, then forced him to repeat somehow to Downer.
Right. That's the part that's a little, how does the agent get to do that?
And normally I'd say that's like, you know, this is just like some crazy nonsense from Papadopoulos. But on Sunday, Lindsey Graham was doing all the talk shows on Fox, And he echoes this theory. Here's what he said on Sunday.
Well, how wide was the problem? How deep was it? And what was the basis of it? Why was the United Nations unmasking people, American citizens caught up in conversations? Was there any legitimacy at all to Papadopoulos working with the Russians, or did they plant that idea in his head about the Clinton email being in the hands of the Russians? Did it come from him working with the Russians or somebody working with us?
The whole thing about the UN unmasking people, I actually have no idea what that's about.
What
I'm not going to spend time. Yeah. I don't even know. It's a new one to me. Like, what, how is the UN? You know what? Let's not waste time thinking about it. But the other one about Papadopoulos and the Russians planting that idea in his head, that is clearly him suggesting on national TV that Mifsud was a U.S. agent who was brought in to set up Papadopoulos with this. Which, you know, who knows? Maybe it's true. Maybe that's what Barr's going to be investigating.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, it sounds like the kind of thing that he pulled a team together for. That, I mean, let's say that, what do you think about that? Let's say it's a possibility. Like, why would U.S. intelligence do that, though? Like, what are they trying to do? Like, just to upset their entire campaign to bring down Trump? And if that was the case, then why didn't they actually follow through with it?
So here's what they have that, like, suggests it's the idea is sort of plausible if you don't look at the whole picture. There's another guy that they brought in, Stephen Halper, who was like, hey, Papadopoulos, I'll give you some money, thousands of dollars, to do this thing for me. It sounds really weird and shady. And Papadopoulos, as always, was like, sure, why not? Like, that's the most recurring theme in the book is, like, shady people offer him money, and he's like, that's so weird. I guess I'll take the money. How was I to know that was weird and shady? Halper probably was, at least. He's not, like, he's not formally connected to, you know, U.S. intelligence or FBI. But it seems very plausible he was brought in by the FBI or told to, like, called in a favor, basically. Hey, go talk to this guy. See if this whole dirt thing is about. Although what Halper wanted to pay Papadopoulos for was about the energy situation, not the Hillary Clinton thing. That could have just been the opening. And from what we know now, anyway, that does seem like it was likely influenced by U.S. operations. So now Papadopoulos has extrapolated from that to say that actually Mifsud was also U.S. Intelligence. As far as I know, there's nothing to support that. After all, Mifsud did put him in touch with, quote-unquote, Putin's niece.
Right,
and
right.
The MFA connection, the Russian, like, State Department, basically. So he did have he had one legit Russian contact. The other one was definitely not who she said she was.
Has this Mifsud guy been also, like, interrogated by or is he kind of out of, like, they can't really touch him?
Well, he may be dead now. It's really unclear.
Excuse me? What?
Yeah. Well, I don't think I think that's unlikely. I don't think he's dead. That's, like, one of the claims is he's dead, but, like, who knows? So part of the actual obstruction case against Papadopoulos has to do with the claim from the FBI that this is of all the things Papadopoulos claims, this one may be the one I kind of give him half points for. FBI was saying, like, oh, it's because of Papadopoulos' failure to cooperate that Mifsud was never brought in to be investigated. But that may not be strictly true. And Papadopoulos had no obligation whatsoever to wear a wire. It's just not a sign of anything. But it was failure to cooperate. But one wonders, why would he refuse to wear a wire with Mifsud if Mifsud was a U.S. agent?
U.S. agent,
also,
exactly.
Why would the U.S. government ask him to wear a wire with Mifsud?
Right. to trap him as Mifsud? I don't know.
I have lots of questions about this whole idea, yeah.
Because it makes sense. But this is going to be a very complicated movie once it actually is made.
They'll write out Papadopoulos. They'll leave in Carter Page.
Yeah, we all want Carter Page. I mean, I have, like, a soft spot in my heart for him. It's been a while since I've heard from him.
Oh, according to Papadopoulos, he's threatening. That's what their one interaction was. Yeah, he says Carter Page Skyped him out of the blue and was like, I hear you're getting involved in Russia. Stay away from Russia. Like, implying that that's my territory.
Oh, those are my best friends. That's my best friend.
Yeah, like, I'm the one who's going to get the Russia connection. Back out.
I can actually see that. And that's kind of endearing, too. So
I can't say this was the most relaxing or fun trip to the beach I've ever had, given that's most of it, like, hacking a lung up. But I did have a pair of really super cute shoes, which I never would have picked up for myself and never would have worn otherwise, but they're pretty amazing. And it's all because of Stitch Fix.
Oh, I love Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix does that for me, too. They send me things that I normally wouldn't pick out, and I have always been very averse to trying on, like, you know, styles that I normally won't. But what Stitch Fix does is, like, you know, they are your online personal styling service. So you got your own stylist at your fingertips, and they find and they deliver the clothing, shoes, accessories, everything to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and if you're just not able to go to the store and to buy your own style, they are super good at buying stuff that basically is your style. Like, I've gotten a box where I'm like, did I pick this out? This is exactly what I wear. But they also help you find new things that you need and wouldn't have thought of them, maybe wouldn't have been brave enough by yourself, like my awesome red shoes.
I'll tell you, oh, a red? Did you say red?
Yeah, they're bright red. Yeah, they're definitely not my style at all, but they look pretty
cool. Oh my God, I need a picture of that. I love some red shoes. Well, I'll tell you this, there's been times when I've gotten a Stitch Fix box and, like, my eldest daughter, she's like almost 22, she will gather around. One time there's a friend there and everybody just wants to see what's in there. And then when there's an item that I'm like, well, I don't, you know, maybe this will. And the other thing is, like, my size has changed, and you should go on to obviously their website and you can update your, you know, whatever sizes you need to update and things like that. And I remember one time I got a box and
I forgot to change it.
So I got the box, but I you're able to exchange everything easily. But a friend of mine was there and she's like, no, don't send any of that back. I want it all. Just give it to me. So I kind of did. And that's the thing. I love Stitch Fix because, you know, you only pay for what you keep, what you love, and just return the rest. Shipping, exchanges, returns are completely free.
Yeah. So get started now at stitchfix.com/45th and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th to get started today. stitchfix.com/45th.
So speaking of Russia and Barr and all these investigations, there's some news that we might be getting more from the Mueller report, right?
Yeah. So you'll be hearing this on Wednesday. And the next morning, the Mueller report redacted version is supposedly going to come out. It probably will.
Color-coded, redacted.
Yeah, so we'll see what's going to happen.
The whole thing?
Is that Well, the whole thing, but will be 400 pages of, like, black redaction. Who knows? The whole idea of the Mueller reports, I mean, it feels like we're, like, three news cycles ahead of the news report, of the Mueller report. But really, it hasn't even started yet. And Thursday is just going to be the very, very, very beginning because, like, this is all stalling tactics. There's no way we're getting anything important or the most important stuff in this redacted version.
So is that going to be released to the public or to Congress?
To both. So that's the thing. Okay. What should have happened is that the full version should have gone to Congress to review. Right. Instead, he is taking the stalling tactic of doing a redacted version that goes to Congress and the public. And that will buy him more time until hopefully...
Interest
runs out in it. They can cover more stuff up. The longer the straw's out, the longer the outright... Like, the whole cycle goes on.
This is something that the public and Congress... I mean, and a lot of this, like, you know, the House especially have been waiting for years. The interest is not going to run out. They're going to run this down as...
But think about it. Think about, like, how... So imagine if we'd gotten on the last day of the Mueller investigation all 33 indictments that happened. That would have been, like, overwhelming. Instead, it's like, oh, that's old news. We knew that Flynn was a traitor. We knew that, like, all these, we knew Manafort was, like, shady. Like, when you have people know things in advance, like, this long, drawn-out way, it does take the sting out of it. That's the whole point. And that's what they're trying to do. They're bargaining. They can take the sting out of it enough where they can, it's worthwhile to do this evasion.
Yeah, and also kind of builds up, like, over time, kind of like this, I mean... The outrage kind of done. You're right, I guess. Yeah. Like, if they all came at the same time, it would just be so overwhelming and outrageous. But over time, you just get kind of numb to it. You're like, okay, well, I guess that guy was an agent too. And I guess that guy was an agent too.
I guess they were all trying to have meetings with Russia. Well, that's how it goes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, so there is another, though, line of inquiry that Congress is pursuing pretty, or at least the House is pursuing pretty actively right now. And that's trying to get Trump's taxes, if you want to talk about that.
I mean, that's going to be another thing that's stretched out forever. I'm kind of two thoughts about, like, what's going to be in the tax returns. On the one hand, maybe they are, like, super damaging to Trump. And, like, it'd be the fatal blow to his presidency. I think more likely they're just, like, medium damaging. And he's better off fighting them for as long as possible. Because the longer he's fighting this, the less energy and resources and attention they have to fight other things. So even if, like, he's actually not concerned at all about his taxes, which is not the case. But, like, even if he had zero concerns... He'd have every reason to fight as hard and long as possible.
Well, he can. And now he's got the Supreme Court, like, stacked. And
now he's got his, like, you know, his treasury people. He's got his...
There is definitely something he does not want the American public to know or to see in those taxes. It's either that he... Well, I don't know what it is. What sources of income or how much he's actually worth or what he's actually paid in taxes. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't think he would actually be shamed if it ended up showing that he, like, basically bilked everything and paid nothing.
there's definitely bad stuff in there. I just don't think it's going to be like...
I just think
fatal to his presidency.
No, nothing is fucking fatal to this guy's presidency. Yeah. That's the thing, Susan. Nothing is fatal to his presidency. I mean, my bet is that
Russian collusion would not have been fatal to his presidency.
Right. I mean, getting, you know, adultery with porn stars and paying them off is not, nothing is fatal to this man. I still think that might be. Oh, girl, I don't know.
But I really, honestly, still think that whole, well, the payoff, not the affair. I still think that is like, if there's anything that's like possibly out there that is just cannot survive. And I don't know if that's what the situation was, but like there's definitely scenarios there for there to be the kind of factual evidence that is ironclad and unsurvivable.
Like how? In terms of an impeachment?
Because the Trump organization would fall.
Oh.
Like in terms of like campaign finance, yeah, yeah.
My bet with the tax thing is that it's an ego thing, that he's really just trying to protect. I mean, you know, we know for his entire career, he's inflated like what he's worth. And, you know, I mean, he's pretended to be somebody else and calling media and saying this is what this guy's worth. I mean, so I think it's an ego thing, but, you know, but it's kind of...
Oh, you know what? Change my mind. Here's how the taxes can bring Trump down.
Ooh, let's hear this.
The taxes come out and they show that Trump is worth far less than he's always claimed.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump being Trump is like, no, you idiots. I lied about all my wealth and income on their taxes to try and not pay less like everyone does. I'm actually super rich. That's how he goes
He would
down.
Tweet it. He would tweet it.
He would. He would.
Well, right now there's all, I mean, like, look, for the last few years, we've heard all kinds of excuses about why we're not getting the taxes. You know, they're under audit, blah, blah, blah. But I want, actually this past Sunday, Mick Mulvaney, who is White House Chief of Staff, said that the House Democrats will never see Trump's tax returns, that's an issue that was litigated during the election and that people don't care and whatever. And then this is what Sarah Sanders had to say, speaking to Chris Wallace a couple days ago.
The president's been clear from the beginning, as long as his taxes are under audit, he's not going to release them. He's also filled out hundreds of pages in financial disclosure.
I know, but will he tell the IRS not to...
But hold on, Chris, this isn't...
Will he tell the IRS not to release them, though?
We'll have to see what happens on that front. But the president's been clear. This issue's even been litigated. We went through it in 2016. But one of the biggest things that I think people aren't seeing is the fact that the only reason that the Oversight Committee has the ability to request someone's taxes or for the purpose of determining policy, this has nothing to do with whether or not they're going to determine policy. This is all about political partisanship. This is a dangerous, dangerous road. And frankly, Chris, I don't think Congress, particularly not this group of congressmen and women, are smart enough to look through the thousands of pages that I would assume that President Trump's taxes will be. My guess is most of them don't do their own taxes, and I certainly don't trust them to look through the decades of success that the president has and determine anything. He's filled out hundreds of pages in a financial disclosure form, and I think it is a disgusting overreach that they are making when they're not doing this based on policy, and it puts every American who's filled out tax reform or tax forms in the past.
This is a yes or no question. Have you filed your Have you filed your taxes yet?
I'm almost finished. I'm in the process. I've got a couple more days.
I'm asking for an extension. Okay, Sarah, thank you. Thanks for your time. Always good to talk with you.
Wasn't she leaving, though? Like, wasn't she going to leave at the end of the year? Why is she still around?
I don't know. I mean, whatever. I don't know.
No one else will hire her because she knows that she has, like, I mean, that's the most, like, undemocratic, idiotic thing you could say. Oh, Congress is too stupid to understand the taxes?
Right, right. That they're just, like, it's just thousands of pages. It's too complex. I mean, it's just one excuse after another. But on the other end of this, like, they're doing their media pushback. But on the other end of this is you have Trump's personal attorney is writing letters to the Treasury Department warning them, threatening litigation, that if you turn these documents over to lawmakers who have subpoenaed the documents, you know, they would file a lawsuit against them. So they're taking it seriously enough that they're threatening litigation against the Treasury Department from releasing this. And I don't know how they're going to internally resolve this, because how do they, I mean, although my understanding is that the date to turn it over was April 10th, and that has surely
passed.
That's already passed. So now what? What do you think's happening inside the Treasury Department at this point?
Well, they're not concerned. I mean, probably Trump offered them a pardon like he did for the CBP.
Oh, right. He says that was a lie.
Well, I mean, the question is, like, other private orders, like his tax preparers, people like that, will they comply? That's going to be the real fight, I think.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Private citizens, basically.
I mean, the Trump administration is not going to follow the law.
Right, right.
And I'm past the point of thinking they'll have consequences for that.
Yeah, and the IRS has until the 23rd to provide the House with tax returns. But, you know, I mean, it's not going to happen either. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free.
While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits.
Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level.
The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone.
You can also view stock collections, like the 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest.
Robinhood is giving 45th listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at the45th.robinhood.com. That's the45th.robinhood.com.
Speaking of Trump getting away with everything and nothing bringing down his presidency, this bit of news caught my eye and I hadn't seen it reported much, but I thought it was important to look at this because one of the things we thought about in terms of like how many different ways can the presidency, can this man be impacted, was like, you know, the fact that he is egregiously violating the Emoluments Clause. And at this point, pretty much everybody knows what that is, right? But the Department of Justice apparently just...
We know it. We just can't say it.
Emoluments. Apparently just very recently adopted a very narrow interpretation of this law. Now, the law basically is supposed to bar foreign interests from, you know, from federal officials, from government officials taking foreign money. But what the DOJ did was the DOJ just filed some, did some filings where they say that... this new interpretation would, quote, permit the president and all federal officials to accept unlimited amounts of money from foreign governments as long as the money comes through commercial transactions with an entity owned by the federal official. That is literally in complete contradiction and contravention to the whole point of the Emoluments Clause. I mean, what
they... Yeah, do they think the founders didn't have private businesses? Like, is this like a new thing we invented now?
Right.
No. Like, that was...
Right. I mean, the argument they're making is he's not accepting the money personally. It's coming through his business, but that doesn't matter. I mean, so basically they're like, that's our stance. And so of course, if, you know, there's lawsuits pending on this, including, I think one in Maryland too. And, that means you're just going to fight it tooth and nail anyways. And then you'll end up the Supreme Court and he will win.
Yeah. I mean, concerns are like, they're going to render that part of the Constitution meaningless in order to not wade into political quote unquote waters. The courts will.
In order to not weigh into, isn't this all political? How is that not weigh? I mean,
that's what they're saying. It's like political. It's not for the courts. So let's not make a ruling whether the president's violating the law, because that would be a political decision, which courts are generally reluctant to do. They would have fancier language for it, but I think that may be the thrust of their decision when they finally get around to ruling on it.
Well, again, he's the cockroach that nothing will kill. All right, I want to talk a little bit about. This has been ongoing. I was actually on. I was on NPR this morning to talk about this, and I've gotten a lot of media requests to write and talk about this. And that's like the ongoing onslaught against Representative Ilhan Omar, including by the president, which just, I mean, even today he was asked, you know, do you kind of regret like the things you've been tweeting and stuff about her? Because she's getting death threats. I mean, she's getting some serious, not just threats, but like if you go to Twitter and you put in hashtag Ilhan Omar, it ends with must resign. I mean, that's trending at this point because of the fervor that's been created, along with Trump's help. So Trump tweeted a video a few days ago on April 12th, which I don't know if you've seen this. It's a mishmash of Omar speaking, like her repeating this line that she gave last week at an event where she says, you know, some people did something referring to 9/11, but it was completely taken out of context because she was trying to make a whole different point. And then it's interspersed with like horrific footage from 9/11 and like, you know, 911 calls, and all those things. And Trump's had that up there and it is such a clear incitement. And then again, a couple days later, or maybe it's the same day, he tweets another video that he retweets it, that, this right-wing organization tweeted saying that Ilhan Omar, it's a video of her talking about she's talking about how she was in some kind of class, a counterterrorism class or a terrorism class, and that every time the professor would mention Hezbollah or Al-Qaeda, like his posture would change. And she was laughing about the demeanor of the professor. So what they tweeted was that, oh, she thinks these people are funny. Like, she thinks Al-Qaeda is funny. She thinks Hezbollah is funny. Like, you know, basically she's a terrorist or she's easy on terrorism. And Trump also retweeted that. And he is not backing down. There's been a lot of condemnation, but he's just like, got it. And this morning when he was asked, he said, what did he say about her? He said, oh, he's called her ungrateful on Twitter, which is interesting.
Just like the NFL players, apparently.
Right, ungrateful. He always used that kind of terminology for Black people, for immigrants. So that's ongoing. Now, it's interesting because the question is this. I mean, you know, Twitter, it's not that Twitter cannot delete a tweet that they find insightful in terms of inciting to violence. Because, you know, free speech protection, fine, it exists. But you also cannot incite to violence. And it is also a federal offense to threaten government officials. Now, he's not directly doing that, but he's encouraging the threatening of government officials. But they did recently disable a tweet that Trump tweeted that it was like, you know how Trump loves those videos they make of him in the White House where he's like walking and there's like this serious music in the back and he looks like some kind of movie hero. So there was a similar video made. It was like a trailer style video. It showed some of his work and it was set to the score of the Dark Knight trilogy films. You know, the film company was like, oh, no, hello, copyrighted. You can't do that. So Twitter did disable that tweet.
Some laws still matter in this country.
Some laws still matter.
IP is one of them.
Yeah. But Twitter won't delete this. So, and this morning when I was on the radio show, I was on there with a free speech professor who said, you know, well, one of the things that was discussed was like, you know, if Twitter actually disabled it or they got rid of it, it'd almost be like it kind of went away. I don't agree with that. And it might hurt. It's better to have it out there so people can see it and confront it. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't think his tweet about that should be forcibly deleted by the... I think he should delete it. But his tweet was not a incitement to violence. And short of that, I don't think Twitter should take action to remove it.
You don't think so? I mean, when he calls the press...
I mean, it is. Okay, it totally is. But like, I don't think those kind of restrictions should apply to things that are as indirect as his tweet was. That, like, his end goal is to stir up anger and hatred towards her. But that alone, to me, is not saying why she fell off the platform.
I think his end goal is to get her hurt.
I don't think that is his intentional goal, because that doesn't help him any. I mean, he's been pretty clear about what he's doing here. I mean, look at all his tweets about, like, Boeing and how they should be, like, I'm the branding master. He's got it in his head that he can win this war against the Democrats by rebranding them as the party of Ilhan Omar. And that's what he's doing. He is trying to take all these new congresswomen who are, you know, brown ladies and be like, oh, my God, look at all these non-white dudes that are getting power. Like, oh, my God, look how in charge they are. They're even in charge of the white ladies of the Democrats. That's his whole goal. He's trying to rebrand Democrats the party of, like, women of color.
Which is fine.
What I find interesting, though, too, is that the new focus from the White House and from, like, Republican sort of position seems to be all attacking Omar. Before, the sort of more natural, like the more grassroots, the more organic sort of hatred coming out was all about AOC. Mm-hmm. And instead, it seems like someone made like a deliberate call, like, you know what? It'll be more effective not to attack AOC, who is, I guess, easier to portray as more American, maybe.
Omar is low-hanging fruit. I mean, she really is probably the easiest.
She's the easier fruit. So attacking AOC, like, oh, my God, this brown socialist woman. But, yeah, if you want to stir up the racist base, she's not as effective as Omar, which is why it's been less AOC and Omar all the time.
Lately, yeah. And there's, you know, charges of anti-Semitism. And, you know, Omar's gotten herself in some hot water with some of the things that she's said, but then apologized for subsequently. But, you know, this is, I mean, it's concerning because, like, such an overt, to me, it's a call to violence or a call to something against a congressperson. I mean, it's just kind of, it's unprecedented. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. I mean, she's definitely misstepped and said things that she clearly shouldn't have said. But the idea that she is anti-Semitic or racist, I mean, she was not being a great politician when she said it, but she wasn't that. Meanwhile, we have Trump, who is telling American Jews that the Israeli prime minister is their prime minister.
Right.
And that gets, like, not a peep from anyone.
Right.
Like, come on.
And this man, I mean, you want to talk about what was done and said after 9/11. I mean, his first instinct was that, oh, great, I have the tallest building now in New York City. I mean, like, this is that man. So, anyway, it's happening. We're reporting it. It is what it is.
cats can be picky eaters, but I didn't realize how difficult it can get to have two cats to deal with. And trying to keep them both fed and happy with what they're eating and to keep Ghost from not eating all the food all the time before Ragnar gets any is definitely a struggle. And making sure they get all the right nutrients is important because cats are basically family. Not basically. They are our family, let's be real. Yeah. But I never understood the concept of premium cat food because they don't need that slimy goop and the ultra-processed cardboard-looking junk. What they need is something that will keep them healthy and happy at the same time.
Yep. And we're talking about Pretty Please here. Pretty Please was designed for one single purpose, to provide superior nutrition for your cat. And look, I'm the daughter of a veterinary doctor. This stuff actually matters to me. And I'm actually lucky because my cats will eat almost anything. So that allows me to be like, okay, I know they'll eat pretty much anything. So I'm going to pick, you know, the product that has like the best nutrition, the least fillers. And with Pretty Please, their formula is completely grain-free. It has 24 essential vitamins and nutrients, minerals for strong bones and teeth, pre and probiotics for digestive health, which, look, if you have dealt with hairballs, you know what we're talking about. Biotin for shiny fur and healthy nails, and tons of top choice chicken that your cat kind of loves. So,
and not only is Pretty Please the best tasting, most nutritious option for your cat, it's the most convenient. Pretty Please is delivered right to your door every month, providing a full month's worth of premium food for your cat. And shipping is free.
Love it. So quit the premium cat food and treat your cat to the new standard of feline nutrition by visiting prettypleasecats.com and using our promo code 45th for 20% off your order. That's prettypleasecats.com, promo code 45th. prettypleasecats.com, promo code 45th. It's been a hairy week. Some terrible news out of Paris yesterday. The Cathedral of Notre Dame. I mean, I think it was like a construction accident or something. But it was just terrible images of burning. And interestingly enough, a little further over to the east in Jerusalem, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which a lot of people equate with like the Dome of the Rock, and it is right in that periphery, was also on fire at the same time. Not sure what's happening here. And Trump had the brilliant idea. He's like, oh, they need to use like water tankers to put out the fire, which would have destroyed the entire building. But the church spire or the cathedral spire did collapse and there is a tremendous amount of damage. But, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if you saw the video of Parisians like gathering around and singing hymns as it burned. That was like, it was like out of a movie.
Yeah.
It was surreal.
And of course the right wing and the professed white nationalists are all going full on, oh, Muslims did it. Based on nothing.
Yeah.
And they're like, Glenn Beck, it's an attack on Western culture. Like, well, that is like, yes, it is. But also it's very much an active Catholic church. Like, and they're trying to equate it with like the West and the whiteness. I don't know.
But also, I mean, aren't like literally there's not a single French official who's saying that's what this is.
Oh, it's not that at all.
They believe.
It's not that at all.
It's a construction accident. But yeah, Glenn Beck yesterday, I mean, his argument was, what he said was, if Islamists did it, there'll never be any evidence for it. It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, because that way there's just no winning, right? And Omar tweeted about it and she said something about the art and architecture being of that cathedral being something that's so beautiful that it kind of calls everybody to it and to care about it. And that was then attacked this morning saying, oh, that's what matters to her. It's a place of worship for Christians. And that's the thing she cares about. Anyway.
That's exactly the kind of tweets that they were like doing themselves. Like, and then they're like, oh my God, she's saying the same thing. Let's freaking, I mean, that's the problem with the response to her is that from the Democratic Party, which she's definitely not gotten support from. I mean, some of stuff, she's gotten some support, but a lot of the establishment has definitely not done much of anything to get in her corner. It's just that no matter what she says, they're going to interpret it in their world lens, which is she's a Muslim terrorist. So it doesn't matter what she says. They'll find a way to make it sound like it's a bad thing.
Yeah. Which, I mean, look, on one hand, I think, you know, maybe don't say anything for a little bit. Wait till this guy gets out of office. But on the other hand, that's not why she's there.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, she politically does have to know that anything she says will be used against her. And to keep speaking, but to, I mean, all even to some extent, this applies to all politicians everywhere all the time. And yes, it can be harder for her, but there's no way of avoiding it.
Yeah. Well, Trump, you know, he likes to pick and choose his enemies and friends, and he once again reaffirmed his love and friendship for Kim Jong-un in a couple of tweets this past week. He said, "I agree with Kim Jong-un of North Korea that our personal relationship remains very good. Perhaps the term excellent would be even more accurate, and that a third summit would be good." Oh my God, these summits have been a disaster. "A third summit would be good, and that we fully understand where we each stand. North Korea has tremendous potential for extraordinary growth, economic success, and riches under the leadership of Chairman Kim. I look forward to the day, which could be soon, when nuclear weapons and sanctions can be removed, and then watching North Korea become one of the most successful nations of the world." What is his obsession with Kim?
He wants to solve this crisis and, you know, make it one of his, like, great success stories. And to him, there's no reason not to be friends with Kim Jong-un. As long as he's being nice to Trump, Trump will be nice to him. And the problem for, you know, international relations and international
world order. Is he being nice to Trump? He's like embarrassing Trump every time they turn around.
Trump doesn't see that. He thinks that public praise for him is always a good thing. So it's not embarrassing whether it comes from like China or Russia or North Korea. That's all he cares about. And Trump's worldview is that leaders can do what they want to their own citizens. What a man does to the citizens of the country he rules is his business and no one else's. And on that basis, Trump and Kim Jong-un can get along. They can work towards the same thing because they don't really care what happens to people in North Korea or South Korea, for that matter, when it goes out.
Well, Trump also was very busy last couple of days watching the Masters. And riddle me this. What has Tiger Woods done to deserve the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which Trump tweeted he's going to give him?
He golfed with Trump.
Just for folks who might not know, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, it's one of the highest civilian awards.
It is the highest award
the U.S. can give. And it recognizes people, quote, who have made an especially meritorious contribution to the security or national interest of the U.S., world peace, cultural, or other significant public or private endeavors. I guess you could say it falls in the very last category. No. He made a comeback. Okay. Well, he's getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom, whereas John McCain still gets vilified as a deceased POW senator.
I mean, Trump, like, basically attributes, if anyone, like, professes, like, to like Trump or be his friend and succeeds, Trump sees that as his success, as his real, like, it's an extension of his own greatness. So basically, he's giving this medal to himself.
Oh, that's, can he do that actually?
Well, not literally, but this is like metaphorically.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if, I bet you he's asked somebody already, can I do that?
Yeah.
He'll just take one and steal it. I will say this, that, you know, I my heart breaks that you spent your vacation as you were dying reading that terrible book, Susan. You should have just abandoned it, you know. Yes.
Send me your thoughts and prayers. It was a tough time, dark and lonely time. Me and Papadopoulos by the poolside.
Tell me you followed it up with a good podcast or a different book, you know, just to cleanse your head out.
I read a great book on the extinction of the Rocky Mountain locust, which was pretty interesting. So
that's amazing. Know, I'm fascinated by times. Your book choices. I love it. Almost everything I read is about a murder mystery. I can't help it. But anyway, all right. I guess that's it for this week then.
Well, next week. I'm not going to commit to this, but maybe we may possibly come in a bit early next week, given that the bar report's going to drop on Thursday, but remains to be seen.
Yeah, we should do that. We should definitely do that. All right. Sounds good. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. I hope you feel better. And everybody, we'll be back in 7 days. Maybe. We'll see. Thanks.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.